from retipster.com. This is the RE Tipster Podcast. This show is all about using your limited time and energy to invest in real estate with lower risk and bigger rewards. If you want to build more financial freedom from real estate without putting your life savings on the line, this show is for you.
Well, hey there, how's it going today? This is Seth from the RE Tipster Podcast and the RE Tipster Blog, and welcome to episode number 13. In this episode today, I've got an awesome interview with a guy named Greg Schrader. And Greg is somebody who has been just sort of dropping me random emails for the past like year or two now, just letting me know about some of the success that he's been having as a land investor. And as he will explain in the next few minutes, Greg is somebody who discovered my blog when he was just doing some Google searching. And he has really just kind of followed it to a T, a lot of the stuff that I've been talking about to find deals, get deals sold, and really make this business happen and make some pretty big paychecks along the way. Let's listen in on this conversation, and I think you'll agree, Greg's got a pretty cool story, and there's a lot we can all learn from him. Greg, how's it going?
It's great, Seth. Thanks for having me.
Great. Awesome. Well, just to kind of kick this off, I'll sort of ask the question I usually ask, and that is, how did you first learn about land investing, and what made you decide to give this a shot?
Well, Seth, I've always been interested in real estate. Mm-hmm. I sold homes. My first job out of college, I sold Jim Walter Homes, which, you know, we built on your lot, and always wanted to get into, you know, flipping homes or buying rental property. I knew I wanted to be in real estate, didn't really know how I wanted to get there. I was driving through Houston one day in the neighborhood that I'm probably, you know, not so good of a neighborhood to buy or to rent in, but maybe owner finance in. And I saw a sign that said owner finance home. So I go home and I start Googling, you know, maybe I could borrow money and buy this home and sell it owner finance for more interest, and come across the RE Tipster website.
Oh, cool.
And I don't know how that brought me to your site, but I started reading how you had took the proceeds from selling land to buy rental property. Mm-hmm. My wife was actually out of town that time, and I read a lot of your blogs. And when she came back in, I said, "Hey, I read this pretty cool thing on the internet. I think we're going to put a mailer together. What do you think?" And she said, "Yeah, let's try it."
So it's just kind of like a Google search, and you sort of came across my stuff and started learning that way. That's awesome.
I never even thought to invest in land. It was just, mm-hmm. you know, it was low price of entry, and so, yeah, let's do it.
Yeah. So when you started that first direct mail campaign, what was that? Was that like a scary feeling? Like, was there a lot of doubt in your mind about what was going to happen?
No. I knew that I wanted to do something to generate income away from my 9-to-5 and my mm-hmm. wife's 9-to-5. And I was willing to lose a little bit of money. I mean, I priced it out, click to mail. I was doing the larger postcards. I think they were 50 cents a piece. And, you know, I told my wife, I said, "Let's just get $1,000 together, and if we lose, we lose. Let's just do it." Mm-hmm. And, you know, I had her blessing, and I was okay with losing. So we, you know, we went out and we just did it.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. And when you were doing that direct mail, like, what kind of list were you using? Where did you get your data from?
I actually went to the courthouse. It was a county over from where we live. Mm-hmm. Paid $40 for a list.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Had a really good time opening up that list, but I figured out how to, you know, a lot of mm-hmm. with Microsoft and figured it out.
Sure. Yeah, some of those lists are just awful to figure out. But if you can get there, it's totally worth it.
That's right.
So what were the results like when you did that first campaign? Like, did it surprise you in a good or a bad way, or how did that all turn out?
I was very surprised at the number of people that checked their mail and called me back. I mean, I sent 250 letters out, and I've got a 6% return.
Okay.
Now, it ended up one of those neighborhoods I sent to had high HOA fees, and people were just giving their property away.
Cool. Yeah, I just recently came across one of those myself, so sometimes I can skew the results a little bit.
I'm going through one now also.
Sure. Yeah, that's actually something – I used to just be like, automatically, no, forget about it. But I've come across some where the profit potential is huge. So I think sometimes it can still make sense, but unless it kind of falls into that camp, I'm usually just one to walk away. Is that kind of how you think of it too?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Unless it's like some of these lake properties, it'll have an HOA for $100 a year and you get access to the boat dock. Mm-hmm. That's with the, for, you know, $300 a year or $40 a month. And that's, I'm going to have a hard time, I think, selling somebody on that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I hear you. Let's talk about some of the deals you've done. Are there any examples you can talk about? Just like purchase price, sale price? Yeah.
Absolutely. You know, the first one that I bought it for, and I said if we'd spend $1,000, well, we ended up finding one that it was on the tax roll for $40,000. Mm-hmm. We spent $3,538 on it using a title company, sold it for $9,500.
Wow. So nice.
That first deal, I was super happy with that. Mm-hmm. And then led into my second deal I bought for $100. Mm-hmm. Which I would have never offered somebody $100 for a land if I didn't read your blog. And I sold it. Ended up it was flood property, unbuildable, but the neighbor was happy to buy it for $1,000.
Nice.
Yeah, and got a couple. I've got three more that I want to tell you about because they kind of go together. I've got 5 acres for $50. It was land. Yeah, it was landlocked, and I ended up selling it for $3,000. A guy was specialized in getting access to landlocked property, and was real happy to buy 5 acres for $3,000. Trying to gain access, I made a couple phone calls to the surrounding owners, and I found a guy that he didn't want to sell his 5 acres next to mine, and he couldn't tell me how to get to that 5 acres, but he had 8.1 acres that he'd sell me for $1,000. Wow. It was 22 residential lots, and I ended up selling that for, $38,233.
And, Sadia, how much did you pay for that?
I paid $1,000.
What? Are you serious? That's awesome. Wow. Yeah.
That's my biggest, that'll never happen again.
So what's the ROI on that?
I mean, I used to have it out, and it was honestly the ROI was lower on that than the $50 property that sold for $3,000.
That's true. That's a good point. Wow, that's actually a great lesson. The whole thing about landlocked property. I mean, sometimes I understand why people get spooked by that because I mean, in a sense, it's unusable because you can't get to it, sort of. But I mean, like you said, I think as long as you're buying it cheap enough so that basically, so the numbers can only fall in your favor on the backside. I mean, that's if you only spent $50 on something, I mean, it's kind of hard to lose in that scenario. And you clearly did not lose there.
No. And I was thinking I can always put it on eBay for $100 and somebody will bid on it. I'll get them. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I know a lot of the landlocked parcels I've bought have been like in a similar range, like $150, something like that, you know, like very, very low. I always make really good money on it. Sounds like you did too. So that's great to hear.
And I told the guy, I think I told the guy three times on the phone before we met face to face. I think I told him three times, you do know this is landlocked. And he knew what he was buying and he was happy to do it. Mm-hmm.
Sweet, man. That's great. Any other deals you want to talk about?
You know, I bought one, my first, I guess this was kind of a game changer. My first one to buy that I'd never seen before. Everything before then, I was going out looking at the property, spending way too much time pre-qualifying. Mm-hmm. First one I bought sight unseen, I bought it for $500. Mm-hmm. It was in hill country, desirable part of Texas, but it hill country is kind of tough because you can't tell how much that hill slopes and if it's buildable. Mm-hmm. But I offered her $500. I actually told her that she would get a better deal putting it on Craigslist, and she just really wanted to get rid of that property. And she said, well, if you're going to give me $500, let's do whatever we need to do. And I sold it 2 months later for $8,000.
Whoa, man, you're doing really good at this. That's awesome.
I've had some pretty good returns here lately. I'm spending a little bit more, so the margins aren't getting as high, but I'm still making the same amount of profits.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And are these all deals you found through direct mail? Like, have they come in from any other source?
The only one that didn't come through direct mail was the one that I paid $1,000, sold it for $38,000. Mm-hmm. I bought it from, you know, the guy that had the property next to a direct mail.
Okay. And are these, have you been doing mostly postcards? Is that kind of the main way you've been sending your mail out?
Absolutely. Postcards. Mm-hmm. I went from the large yellow postcard that, you talked about on your website to the 30% same as stamp, white and black postcard, the small one. Mm-hmm. And I've gotten, I've used the same postcard from day one, and it works.
Cool. Is that like a template you got from somewhere? Did you make it up or?
You know what? And Seth, you're not going to like it. I looked at your template. And I made it up on. As a word.
No, that's
simply yours. It said notice real big at the top of it, mm-hmm. and yeah. explained, you know, I can close fast, and I want to buy property in this county, and I quit putting my phone number on. I do a Google Voice number that goes straight to voicemail, and I put my website. So, you know, during my 9-to-5, getting all these phone calls was overwhelming. And then I tried Miller without putting a phone number at all, and their callbacks were going down because of that. So now that give them a chance to leave a voicemail or email me, and I'm still getting the 3-5%.
Sweet. Now, just this question just popped into my mind. How much would you say you've spent on, like, education in this whole process?
Zero?
Okay, zero. So pretty much...
I said, if we can monetize the time, there's been a lot of time, but I've done while I was driving or doing something else. It was just listening to podcasts and learning like that.
Okay, so pretty much everything that you've learned and implemented has been from stuff you've heard on podcasts, read on, I guess, my blog, maybe other sources too.
Yes.
That's a big point to emphasize is, you know, I hear from, and I, you know, I think it's a fairly common thing. People will buy courses because they kind of feel like if they just buy the course, that's going to somehow like make it all better, make it work. But it's like kind of the opposite is the case in your situation. Like you spent nothing on courses and you're still like doing really, really well at it. It kind of comes down to like determination. Like you kind of saw the value in the strategy and it's like, I'm going to make this work. And you just did it, right?
That's exactly right. I knew that I wanted to make this work. I knew that I wanted to be in real estate for a long time. And I just never really had the money to get into buying a house and the time to flip the house.
Yeah.
And your program, what you were presenting on your blog, I said, gosh, I can do this. I could do this today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I know. That's kind of the beauty of it. It's like, yeah, like you don't need loans. You don't need any of that stuff. I mean, it's sort of like pocket change. I mean, I don't want to like speak too lightly of it because I know it's, you know, it's a few hundred or a few thousand dollars, but compared to like most other real estate investing opportunities, I mean, it's like, it's really not that big of a deal.
No, I mean, we haven't borrowed a dime. And honestly, that was a big thing that my wife and I agreed with before we did anything was we will not borrow money, no matter how good the deal that comes through. We're doing this to get out of debt, not to get in more debt.
And yeah.
It's out.
Yeah. Is your strategy to like, do seller financing or buy rental properties, or is there any like particular direction you're trying to go?
I kicked around the seller financing and I'm still somewhat interested in it. Texas has a lot of restrictions on seller financing unless you do a deed of trust. So it's going to have to be the right property where I get basically what I spent on the property back as a down payment. Because I'd have to foreclose. I know there's a lot of people that are doing contract for deed in Texas, but if you really dig deep into it, really read up on exemplary contracts, they can take you to court and sue you and get 100% of the money back that they've given you for the property. My big fear is have, 20 properties that I have to pay back all the money that I've made over the last couple of years. So, I know Jack Butelis says you learn early on you're a cash seller or a note seller, and I guess I'm a cash seller.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I hear you. It's seller financing is a whole, I don't want to say it's a whole different game, but it kind of is. I mean, there's a lot you have to learn and just be ready to sign up for if you're going to go down that road. And I have heard that about Texas when I was researching it about a year ago. Texas is not a land contract state. That's a deed of trust state. So, I mean, if you ever are going to go down that road, like I'd say it's totally worth paying for an attorney, making sure it's done right, especially that first time. Once you kind of know the process, then you can kind of determine what you're comfortable with after that. But, you know, I would not want to screw it up, especially the first time through.
Right.
Yeah. So how have you been getting your properties sold to date?
You know, Craigslist is the best tool. I've got two different Craigslist accounts to where I can renew my ad, you know, almost every day. On each of those, I'll do two or three listings for each property. I use tag words, which helps. Basically, I'll go to Wikipedia and get anything that has to do with that county I'm selling in, any city's name, any school. anything in the county around that, use it as tag words. And I'm drawing a lot of traffic. And the way I know I'm drawing traffic is I add a link to a YouTube video for every property. Mm-hmm. And as that, if I'm getting a lot of hits on that video, it means a lot of people are looking at my Craigslist ad.
So, and Craigslist doesn't allow clickable links, right? So are people like copying that link and pasting it manually?
And I have a note on there, you must copy and paste.
Interesting. Cool. That's actually a good idea. I usually include links in mine, but I don't actually say that, but I probably should, making it more obvious that they have to do that.
Interesting. Right. I put GPS coordinates on there, which a lot of people don't know how to use those, but mm-hmm. What I'll do is I'll take any kind of notes on my ad, save it to my notes in my iPhone, to where when people text me and ask questions, I can text them back everything in one text, so I don't mm-hmm. have to spend, you know, a lot of back and forth. Mm-hmm. But in that, it'll have a Google link to the property, to each corner of the property. It'll have GPS coordinates to each corner of the property, and then a video of the property.
Okay. And the video you're doing, is this just like a Google Earth video, or what does that consist of?
Simple Google Earth video. I've been buying some properties here lately in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, and my brother lives there, so he's going out for properties and taking a short video for me.
Cool.
We've got an agreement. I pay him what I pay. We go look, and he does a lot better job than mm-hmm. we go.
Yeah.
Than I think we go.
Yeah, for sure. So. Yeah, cool. You mentioned these tag words in Craigslist. Help me understand that. Are you just like finding certain keywords and including them somewhere in the body of the ad, or is there another place you're putting them, or how does that work?
Well, I have the description of the ad, and then at the end of it, I just type keywords colon, and then I have about 100 words after that all have a comma after them. So if somebody's looking, like say I've got a piece of property advertised in Cleveland, Texas, mm-hmm. and somebody gets in, they're looking for property in Conroe, Texas. Well, since that's a tag word, that my ad will pop up at the top, you know, hey, I've got this 1 acre for sale. And oh gosh, that acre is right next to Conroe right next to Cleveland, and it's cheaper. So maybe we'll go look at that lot also while we're looking at property.
Wow. Okay. And the main idea is that people will be searching for this stuff, right? And is that the main benefit?
Or that's not? Right. I've also got in there, I've got vacant land, I've got prepper, camping, anything fishing, hunting. So if somebody's looking for a hunting property, my ad's going to pop up. If somebody's looking for a mobile home, my ad will pop up.
Wow. So you can almost have like a swap file where, you know, there's a list of keywords that like always applies, and then maybe a separate list of like things specific to that area. And you said you just go onto Wikipedia to get those things?
I am. And you're right. I'll go to an old ad and I'll keep the keywords that we'll use for everything. Then I go to Wikipedia and I find keywords for that specific county that I'm selling in.
Mm-hmm.
If that high school is known for the Longhorns, I might put in Longhorn football.
Wow. Does that take a lot of time to figure out which words you should be using, or is it like a couple minutes?
A couple minutes. Mm-hmm. I mean, you go through Wikipedia, you type it up. I mean, I can't really copy and paste because I've got to put a comma behind every one of them. Mm-hmm. But no, it doesn't take long.
Mm-hmm. That's a pretty sweet Craigslist hack. I'm going to try that on my next one. Thanks for sharing that. That's really cool.
No problem. I can send you a link to one of mine and let you see what it looks like.
That would be really cool. Yeah, I'd love to see that. Okay, so like other than Craigslist and other than your brother in the Dallas area, are there any specific tools or resources you've been finding pretty helpful in the business? Like what do you use on a daily basis that like you couldn't live without?
Well, okay. I use the Facebook. Mark Podolsky's got a good Facebook chat board.
Yeah.
I use that a lot for questions. From that, we've put together, there's five of us in a group on a private Facebook Messenger thing. Mm-hmm. And I'm telling you, we really help each other out. If I have a question about writing a deed or a scenario that I haven't, you know, experienced before, these guys are super helpful. And, you know, we have a conference call once a month. It's really cool that has came out of the other page. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, Texas, I've only bought in Texas so far, and there's no disclosure of how much property sold for. So I use basically Realtor, Land and Farm, Zillow, LandWatch, about five different I'll go to like five different websites and see price per acre mm-hmm. before I price property, because I want to have the best price in the county. So mm-hmm. I'll, you know, see what I want to sell for it, and then I'll know that I need to offer less than that if I want to make money in this county before mm-hmm. I send a mail. And I'm not opposed to paying half. You know, I don't have to buy it at 25%. If I know that, you know, I can double my money and make good money, I'm okay with that.
Yeah, that's not a bad deal. Not at all. So going back to the Facebook group thing, so it sounds like you've got like sort of like a mastermind thing going. Is that something that you guys just sort of made the connection on your own, or did somebody put that together for you, or how did that come about?
It was put together, and I was asking a lot of questions in the main forum, and one of the members actually invited me to join the group. Mm-hmm. And I'm real glad he did. I mean, it was it has helped me out a lot. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's so there's five of you guys. You said you have a phone call every week or something, or?
No, we do one monthly.
One a month. Okay. Oh, I got you. All right. Yeah, that's great, man. I'm really glad to hear that. Yeah, mastermind groups sometimes are hit or miss, but I mean, if you've got even a couple of the right people in there, and you know, if the conversation goes in the right direction, like you can learn a ton that you would never pick up on your own.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Are those people all from Texas, or just from all over the place, or?
So they're all from. They've all been through the Land Geek program. I think they all met at boot camp, but. Okay. I'm the only one from Texas, and I'm actually the only one that has a sales background. Mm-hmm. But those guys are killed. I mean, they've been real successful. With mm-hmm.
Sweet, man.
And it's thanks you. If I told you who it was, you'll recognize all the names. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, probably. Yeah, there's certain people who are definitely more active than your average person. I'm sure they would stick out. Any other resources you want to talk about, or are those kind of the main ones?
Success Plant, which is now landinvestors.com. That's a good one. Mm-hmm. They've got a good forum there. That's about it. It's pricing the property and asking questions and getting the answers to my questions. Mm-hmm. Those are the tools that I would say mm-hmm. Really stick out.
So it sounds like between the blog, the podcasts, Mark's group, the Success Plant group. I mean, you've been able to get a lot of dots connected along the way, right? That's pretty
Absolutely.
Smart.
Oh yeah. But it all started finding your blog and reading, basically reading everything that you offered on the blog. And then it's all gone from then. I didn't know about Mark until I started listening to podcasts. Mm-hmm. And that's where I found that. And same with the Land Academy. I mean, those guys have been doing this forever, but I didn't hear about that until I started doing podcasts.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Podcasts are super, super helpful and convenient. So I can see why that would appeal for sure. So you've been at this, you said 16 months?
16 months.
Okay, I gotcha. And how many deals total have you done to date?
Let's see. I've got that. Well, I didn't take that, but I've done 21 deals.
21 deals. Okay.
And this year alone, I did two of them in 2016. I've done 19 since January.
Okay, great. And has it, have there been any like particular challenges with like organization or keeping things straight or having the time to pursue everything, or what's been sort of the biggest challenges or lessons you've learned along the way?
My biggest in the beginning was just letting the phone take over my day. I mean, like I said, I still 50 hours a week at a day job, and I had to get that under control really fast. It was getting to the point where I was spending too much time after hours and on the weekend calling people back. And it was, I hear a lot of people say this is a 2 or 3 hour a week job. It hasn't been that way for me. I've spent a lot of time doing this job. So I got the phone under control using the Google Voice and building a website. And besides that, no, I mean, I keep thinking there's going to be a piece of property that I'm going to buy and buy it wrong and lose a lot of money on it. But knock on wood, that hasn't happened yet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it sounds like you're evaluating your offer amounts and purchasing decisions pretty well before you're closing on deals. Honestly, I would be surprised if you got hurt, just given that you're really scrutinizing it that carefully. I know people who don't do it nearly that well, and they still don't really get hurt either. So, I mean, the fact that you're really looking closely at it, I'm sure is going to help you a lot.
Yeah. I am spending a little bit more now, and that makes me a little nervous. But, I started doing that 3 purchases ago, and I'm still getting the phone calls and the callback rate from the ads. Mm-hmm. I think I'm still buying. Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah. Have you had any properties that like just didn't really get much of a response? Like you posted out there, just nobody called and it kind of got scared. Have you had that yet?
No, I mean, I've had some that I've priced wrong, but I've always, reassess. I mean, I've already changed the price within a week and started getting the phone calls. I've got two lots right now. I mean, we're down in the Hurricane Harvey area, yeah. And I've got two lots that were flooded. And I honestly think that there was a lot of think of the landscape change in that neighborhood, because that they're still holding water, and they weren't holding water when I bought the property. So I probably, you know, will end up donating those or, you know, giving them away. But I don't have a lot, and I bought them for $300 a piece. So it's not the, you know, it sucks, but it's not the end of the world. If that's all I'm going to lose on this, I'll take it.
Yeah, for sure. That donation idea, I mean, it might take a little bit of work to find somebody who will take them, but I mean, I'm sure there's a nonprofit out there that would. You just take it as a tax deduction or something. So what you're saying about being responsive and, you know, being willing to change the price when you need to, and, you know, reposting ads and all that kind of thing, I think that's actually really key. The only times that I've ever had properties that kind of sat on the market for longer than, like, I don't know, 9 months, there's something they all kind of had in common, and that was I didn't really have time to do anything with them in terms of, like, renewing the ads or, you know, responding, like, changing the price, changing the headline, changing the description. Like, if you're really kind of on it and willing to kind of push it forward, like, it's pretty rare that a property will just get, like, stuck. And even if it does, it's like, it's just a question of when you can get around to doing the things you need to do to move it.
That's right. You know, honestly, my turnaround time started out about 2 months, and then I started really tweaking that. And the last few I've sold a lot lower than I think they were worth. And I mean, I really started turning these things around. Two of them I've sold before I even had the deed back in the mail.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, I was just with the profit. I mean, the last one I was able to pay off my wife's car, and you know, yeah, I made less than it was worth, but I was happy to have enough money to pay the car off.
That's a big win, man, for sure. Yeah, that is kind of a battle, like a mental battle, almost kind of like trying to time the stock market. Like, you never really know for sure if you're getting the best deal you could ever get. You just kind of just have to decide to be content with what really is good money. You kind of have to not overthink that and overanalyze it. So have there been any, like, other big surprises, either good or bad, that you've had about the land business? Like, has anything just jumped out to you? It's like, whoa, didn't see that coming.
I guess I was just surprised at the number of people that don't want their land. I've always thought it'd be so cool to have a piece of property. And there are a lot of people in this world that end up with property they never wanted. And they dying for that letter to come to them and just give it away. I mean, I guess I've somewhat been surprised at how mad some people get about getting a postcard. Because I don't put a price on my postcard. And some people get really angry that I even sent them a postcard at all.
I know.
But not me. I think it's funny. I normally record those voicemails and text them to all my friends.
Yeah, you really have to learn to laugh at it. It is kind of weird, though, isn't it? How people don't really see their land as an asset. I mean, I think that segment of society is always going to be out there. You know, whether the economy is good or bad, it's just weird. You know, it's kind of, I mean, it's unfortunate for them because they're really missing out. But, I mean, they're willingly and happy to just give it away. They just kind of see it as a problem. And the beauty is when you realize how to reach those people, because that's where opportunity just really opens up.
I'll tell you where I see the most people that really want to give it away. And I've passed on so many of these. If it's in a city and you can't put a mobile home there, and it's a neighborhood that there's been no homes built in the last 20 years, I mean, do you buy those or do you pass on those?
I mean, that sounds like the kind of thing I'd pass on. I mean, there may be some aspect of it that would make it worth looking closer at, but just based on what you said there, those are usually like pretty low end, like very, very, very cheap lots, right?
That's right. I mean, lots that I could pick up for $100, $200, but, you know, I'd have to mow the grass. That's a big fear. You know, they probably have grass fines on them because the people haven't mowed the grass and the city's gone in and mowed it and put a lien against it.
There's actually the first couple of deals I ever bought were in an area kind of like that. Not exactly, but kind of. There was no homeowners association and grass cutting was not an issue. But it was the kind of thing where there was a subdivision that nobody was building on. And I actually sold them pretty quick. And I think part of the issue was it just takes a little bit of effort to, like, try, you know, to make the property look good and advertise it. Sometimes properties will move if somebody's really putting the effort into making it look nice. And you know, really selling the thing. You know, there are times when, you know, you'll find that just like everything in the vicinity is for sale and none of it's selling. Like that's the big red flag for me when it's like, I'm not sure I'm going to mess with this.
Going back to the HOA, I've got a mailer here recently. I have had 60 calls from the same neighborhood. That tells me run. Do not buy any in a neighborhood if 60 people want to sell the property.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I would be a little concerned about that. I mean, there's probably something going on there that's going to make you say no, I would guess.
Yes.
So for somebody who is, you know, curious about land investing, they're kind of wondering if it's worth their while, or even for somebody who's kind of gotten started and they're just like in their first month or so. I mean, would you have any words of advice for them based on what you've experienced so far?
I'd say for the ones that are wondering about getting into it, because I was guilty about this. For years, I wanted to invest. Land investing is the lowest point of entry that I've found so far. Just get the mailer in the mail and don't put up too much time into setting up LLCs and websites and extra phone numbers. And I see a lot of people doing a whole lot of talking about investing in land, but they don't get their first mailer in the mail. And I'd say the ones that are just starting out, don't quit and don't get upset. I mean, if your mailer didn't work, find out why it didn't work. Find out what you need to do to tweak it and send it out again. I see a lot of people, send the offers out and they get upset. Well, they probably didn't offer enough. I'd say don't make an offer in the beginning. Send postcards and get the people to call back and start having the conversations and just learn how to talk to sellers and it'll happen. It'll come to you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know. It's kind of like what I always say. You kind of have to pick your battles. Like the postcard approach, like it's definitely, it requires more time to like look at stuff. But I mean, I think your acceptance rate is ultimately higher because you actually have time to look at the thing and make the offer is going to be low no matter what, but you can kind of see where they're coming from and, you know, tweak things if they need to be and if you can afford to do that. Whereas, you know, the blind offers, you'll save tons of time, but, you know, you'll usually spend a lot more on mail and probably lose deals that you might not have lost otherwise. So and it's not like one way is like right or wrong, but you just have to understand, like, no matter which way you go, you're giving up something. It's just what you want to give up and what you're okay with.
My opinion is if they tell me no on the phone and they don't hang up, I can counter offer. If they tell me no with a blind offer and they just throw it in the trash, I never hear from them.
That's a good point.
So
that's a really good point.
That's why I like postcards. I've tried blind offers before and I've gotten a pretty good return rate, but it ended up that, you know, most people that responded had property that I didn't want to buy. So I went back to the postcards and it's worked for me.
Yeah. It's the thing that makes me sad is when I hear from people who say, you know, I sent out these 20 postcards and I didn't get any response. I'm like 20? Seriously? Just because it's a numbers game and you really have to give something a solid shot before you can make any like actual determination. And it's hard to do that with just like hardly even doing anything.
Sure. I mean, in my opinion, anything less than 500 isn't enough. Just based on the, you know, if say it's a 2% return rate, which that happens sometimes. And out of those 2% that call back, you're not going to buy every, sometimes you may not buy any of them. So you want as many people to call me. I want as many to call me back as possible.
Yeah. Yeah, since you've been doing this for 16 months now, have you had any instances where, like, you got a call from somebody on a postcard you sent them, like, a year ago? Like, has that happened to you yet, or?
No, I'm getting them from, you know, 2 months ago, but I haven't had – I hear these stories all the time where they've saved your postcard, and, you know, tax season's coming up. I'm expecting maybe I'll start getting those phone calls, but I haven't yet.
It sounds like you've been using the delinquent tax list. Do you have like a certain set number of counties that you're kind of just hitting again and again, or are you still exploring new counties at this point?
Oh, I am. And actually I've shied away from the delinquent tax list. Probably 6 months ago, and I'm using Agent Pro 24/7.
Oh, cool.
And I'll do, I'll do, you know, three counties at a time. Sometimes I've bumped my mailers up from, you know, when I was starting out, I was doing 300, 500. Now I'm doing about 1,500 mailers. And I'll do that, you know, once or twice a month. It's all been in Texas. I haven't left the state yet. I am starting to buy stuff that costs a little bit more. So I'm sending it through the title companies, which gosh, that's a lot easier and takes a lot more of the worry off. But mm-hmm. it's expensive too. I mean, it's $1,200 of clothes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I know what you mean. It's pros and cons, you know. You just have to decide which cost you want to pay along the way.
I've learned that the buyers in these bigger ones, they don't even want to talk about closing in-house. The idea of them sending me a, you know, $5,000 check or $10,000 check and not having the deed, it's just off the table. And mm-hmm. by me telling them, hey, there's a title company in your, you know, right down the road, mm-hmm. you can go to, and they'll do all the work for you. Yeah. They just feel more comfortable.
Yeah, sometimes it is a deal breaker in addition to, you know, a huge time suck if you don't use a title company. So sometimes you just got to bite the bullet and do what you got to do.
Yeah, and you're right. They will drag their feet and, mm-hmm. and they make me a little nervous in the 2-week, 3-week time it takes to close. But if I'm able to use the same title company to buy it as I used to sell it, they can normally push it out pretty fast mm-hmm. on the sell side.
Yeah, and not all title companies are created equal. I know I'm closed a deal right now with a title company, and the closing agent I'm working with, like, I won't say she's bad, but she doesn't really know how to handle certain situations. Like, there was a time where the seller saw some little line item in the title commitment and started freaking out about it. And really, the issue just needed to be explained to her really, really clearly and carefully. And this title agent didn't really know how to do that. And like the deal almost fell apart because of that. It's like if I hadn't known about it and jumped in and like salvaged it, like I could have lost a $20,000 deal. So it's like, I don't know, I guess when you're dealing with people, there's always weird things that can come up because people are imperfect animals for sure.
Yeah. And you know, I had a title company that almost cost the big deal that I told you I bought for $1,000, sold for $38,000. I had to use 2 title companies on that. The first title company said that since they couldn't see access from Google Maps, and this was a mile away from their office, they wouldn't drive out to look at it. But since they couldn't see it from Google Maps, they wouldn't insure it because they said that there was no they didn't think there was access.
Oh, my goodness.
And I told them, if you would drive out there, there's clearly access. You can drive onto the property. Mm-hmm. So I ended up I lost the buyer, mm-hmm. but I got another buyer. And thank God, in about 2 weeks later, and I brought it to another title company, and mm-hmm. it went right through.
Yeah, I actually had a really similar thing earlier this year. I'd never had this before, but the first title company I called on this deal, they said, this looks like that purchase price is too low. This is fishy. We're not doing it. Like, just like, seriously? Because I'm getting a good deal. You're not willing to close this thing? And I mean, luckily I found somebody else that was happy to do it. But it's like, man, what is wrong with you people? Like, you've got the signature of the seller and you're working with them on the process. Like, it's not like something underhanded is even going to happen. But yeah.
They're supposed to be neutral and unbiased. They shouldn't. I don't guess that's really any of their business how much you're buying it
for. I think that's how it's supposed to be. But again, some title companies just don't seem to get it. Not on board with that. So cool, man. Well, hey, is there anything else you want to share or talk about before we wrap this up?
I guess there was another one that I wanted to tell the newbies is just set some money aside and mm-hmm. be willing to lose. You know, if you can come up with $500 or $1,000 and don't, you know, lose sleep about losing it, I think you'd be a lot more successful getting out there and doing it.
I think that's a great point. I mean, especially on the first time through this process, your first direct mail, the first list, the first purchase, first everything, that is like the most valuable education you'll ever get. That's when it really sticks and when you really see it for yourself, like what does and doesn't work. Greg, I really, really appreciate your time. It's been really great to talk to you. I learned a couple new things here like I knew I would. And yeah, I wish you all the best. And if you ever learn new things or want to share more insights, it'd be great to talk to you again.
Oh, definitely. And thanks for having me. I really appreciate the interview.
That's a wrap. That was the interview with Greg Schrader. If you want to see the show notes for this episode and just get a quick overview of all the different things we talked about, definitely head over to the blog at retipster.com/13. That's /13 for episode 13. And you'll see links to various things we talked about. You can see our original video conversation from YouTube. I want to thank Greg again, not only for having this conversation with me, but also just for keeping me posted on his progress. Because it's always encouraging to get just random emails and comments from people were saying, hey, Seth, thank you. What you're teaching works. It worked for me. I've actually been able to make some great money from the things you're teaching. Because really, I mean, that's why I do this, is because I want to help other people increase their financial freedom and live a more fulfilling life through the opportunities that are out there in the world of real estate. And it's always an amazing thing for me to hear from people who are going out there and making it happen. So thanks again, Greg. I appreciate you, man. And if you are listening to this right now, dear listener, and you're thinking, man, that sounds pretty cool what Greg has been able to do, I think I kind of want to get in on that. I would totally encourage you to check out at least one of two things. First of all, obviously, as you've already heard, the RE Tipster blog. I've got a ton of stuff all about the land investing business, a lot of stuff that Greg used when he was getting started. So definitely go check that out. I'll have a lot of links to relevant articles that talk about the land investing business in the show notes for this episode. Again, that's at retipster.com/13. And also, if you want a more structured course format with a support forum and monthly webinars with yours truly, definitely go check out the membership website at retipster.club. And that's where I've actually compiled like a full-blown educational course. It's 12 modules. There's a ton of stuff in there. Pretty much like everything I know and every tool that I use in my business, it's all on that site. So if you really want like an all-encompassing A to Z course showing how it all works, that's where you can go to do that. And absolutely no obligation to do that. It is certainly possible to survive and thrive without it. But if you're somebody who could benefit from a shortened learning curve and more structure that is provided in that kind of format, then definitely check it out. You're more than welcome to join the community, and I would love to see you in there at some point. And with that said, I just want to thank you again for spending your valuable time with me here today. I'm grateful to have your ears and your attention as we dive into these subjects and learn a lot from these special guests we have on the show. Hopefully you find this stuff just as valuable as I do, and I will look forward to talking to you again in the next episode. Talk to you next time.
Thanks for listening to the RE Tipster Podcast. For a full summary of this episode, stocked with links, show notes, and a lot more, check out the podcast archive page at retipster.com/podcast.